All the stories on What's Your Story are special, but this one is extra special. This is Frances Sim, who's 91 and as bright as a 50-year-old. She loves a chat, and she's been in Apollo Bay for a very long time. We pick up the story as she talks about her grandmother on 3 ABR 876 FM, Apollo Bay.
Grandmother Biddle had, she was married at 16 and she had 15 children. She reared 13.
Wow.
And my mother was the eighth of those children. When she was nine, her grandfather, there's another story, he's the one who'd come out here.
Yeah.
He finished up in Ballarat, but not at the goldfields. He's a pretty smart old He started a sawmill.
Okay.
He was a teacher in London.
Oh, right.
I don't know how it got to be a sawmill. But, of course, people were starting to build places, you see. He had been a school teacher, and Henry and my mother were the best read and the most knowledgeable of all the family. I wouldn't say it to them, most of them have died off.
Mm. And so this is your mum?
Mum, and she...
So when did she marry?
Well, she didn't marry until she was 39.
Oh, okay.
If you can believe it, Will, he was known as. Mm-hmm. But he had been married, and his wife had died soon after childbirth, and grandmother Boyce was rearing the baby. But she didn't say much, ever tell us much about that, but he joined up and went to the war, you see.
Right.
He was badly wounded the August before the war ended, and he was blinded.
Mm.
He was put on a ship to come back with wounded soldiers coming back after the war. He gained the sight of one eye.
Oh, fantastic.
Coming home.
On the trip home. Yeah.
And they were married pretty soon after that.
Yeah.
And
so when were you born?
Well, I wasn't born until 1925. My brother was born about 9.5 months after they were married.
No surprise in that.
On the last day of school, the headmaster called me up to the office, and I thought, oh, and they said, what have you done now? And I said, oh, why would he want to see me? You know, we're finishing up tomorrow. And he said to me, Frances, I've decided to... that I'll do this, he said, as long as you agree. He said, I think I'll recommend to the powers that be that you go to the university and do an arts degree.
Mm.
You know what Frances said? Yeah. Oh, I don't want to go to university, thanks very much. I'm going to be a school teacher. I never told my mother. And I think now, afterwards... I thought he should have rang my mother. He should have told a stupid looking 17-year-old girl, should he?
No. So at 16 and 17, what were you doing? What was a day and a week and a month like in your life?
When not much besides going to school, really, and playing a bit of basketball and things and so forth. And but then you didn't go straight to Teachers College. You had to go out until you turned 18. You were not allowed into Teachers College, which wasn't a bad idea, you know. You were sent out as a student teacher. And I think it was a good idea because you got the idea whether you really liked it.
You know,
it looked like a great idea. You got up there and for those days you got your pay every fortnight, you know.
So where did they send you?
They sent me to Druin.
Oh, they sent you home.
So I spent 2 years there. My best friend was Mary Sheehan, who came from up the Mallee somewhere, you know. In those days, the Mallee, we'd heard of the Mallee, but, you know, we lived in Gippsland. And then she got married to this Kevin Doran. Turned out she'd married the uncle of Sister Margaret.
Oh, really? Okay. Wow.
That was another story.
Yeah,
funny. I used to come down here for holidays, you see, because it was my mother's hometown. And the last holiday we'd come down, you've no idea what it was like in those days. For the fortnight over the Christmas and New Year, there was something on in that mechanics hall every night.
Mm.
There was two picture shows, and there was, oh, except Sunday,
mm.
two picture shows. The other nights there was a ball,
mm-hmm.
not a dance, a ball. Yeah. You wore your long
all
dress.
All the good gear, yeah.
And nothing on Sundays. Mm. It was amazing, and there weren't that many visitors at all, locals at all.
It was
all.
A long way to come.
Yeah. The CWA or whoever was running it, beautiful, you know, the churches, all the churches had one, and this RSL had one, and so forth. And when I came out of college, I got a little school named Hallora out of Druin. I spent a lovely year at Hallora, and then they used to send us, you know, junior teachers around a bit. The next year I got to Garfield, because I had to board there. My mother would drive to get me at the weekend and then bring me back again. Finished up there, and I got a letter to say, in the January, to say, you've been appointed to, oh, someplace way over on the border of South Australia.
Mm.
Of course, my mother was getting old by now, you know, and I didn't mind being somewhere where I could board there and come home for weekends. And but I wasn't going to go that far away. And I said to her, I'm not going over there. Oh, perhaps you're better, you know. She probably thought I might marry a nice rich farm.
You know. Western
they
districts.
They were all in the drought, you know, they were as poor as church mice. And
So was marriage on your mind? You were 18, 19 at this time, were you?
No, I had boyfriends galore.
Okay.
You know, as
you
did.
Yeah.
I don't think we were flappers. We'd gone past the flapper stage, but there was always something on, you
but
know.
They were, so there were lots of beaux knocking on the door take you out to.
And my mother still drove the car, and in the country, with the, especially when I was at Laura, I was very popular because she got four petrol tickets a week. That time, has your mother got any spare petrol tickets? I'll ask her at the weekend. And she'd say, oh, who's this for? Anyway, I came down here to a wedding, one of my cousins, and that's when I went home and said to my mother, I love Apollo, but I'd never live in that godforsaken place. I couldn't stand it without train. We had trains in Druin, running up to your lawn. And she said, oh, yeah. So down I came and went to the wedding, and I went to a dance. They're still having, they're having a queen carnival, and there was that dances on. I stayed about a week. And I met this fella. Must have been the RSL. Did you know Bill Varco?
Yeah.
His mother used to live just around the corner, and they had, which nobody had, they had a lounge in a dining room that opened up into a big room, and she'd have card parties and she'd have socials and things. And so my cousin Eileen and I, there's one of Mrs. Varco's tonight, we'll go to that. And Stan was there, her brother Stan, and he brought this fella over, and he said, oh, Francis, this is Jeff Sim. Oh, yeah. So that was it. That's the one I married.
And was it kind of instant? Did you take a shine to him straight away?
Well, I took a shine to him, and he took a shine to me. And he was a cartage contractor. He was had a, what was a big truck then carting stone, doing roads. Condon's had the quarry out there, and that was all right. I had, I think, a fortnight. I stayed, and I said, oh, of course, I've got to go home, and I live in Druin, and, oh, yeah, where's Druin, you know? Well, I'll come up for the weekend, and I said, gee, it'll take you a long time. Was nothing.
Okay.
But when I got home, and I practically walked in the door and said to my mother, I've met a most gorgeous bloke. She said, I'm sick to death of you, Francis, coming home and meeting gorgeous blokes. I don't want to hear about it. So anyway, up he came at the weekend, arrived at midnight. As soon as he knocked off work, he rushed home and got changed and dressed and so forth and drove up there in his truck.
Yep.
And by then I had started, I got a job with Kraft Walker Cheese Company, who were just up the road from us in the office. Never been in an office in my life, but still, they were quite glad to get me because I applied for the job. And so I had to go to work, and he not the first time he didn't come, he just came for the weekend. "But I could chop a bit of wood for you, Mrs. Boys," he said, you know. "Would you like your lawns mowed?" You know, he was one of those, he had to be doing something.
Well, he was, he was making his intentions very clear.
And then he did come up and stayed, they must have been between contracts, and he stayed about perhaps a week or 10 days or something. And my mother saying, "Oh, he's a good worker, that Jeff. I like him." And he loved his food, and she loved to cook.
Yep.
And he loved apple pie, and got apple pie every day, I think.
Oh, fantastic.
And roast veggies. Oh, believe that, it's not
you
any
sure?
good.
Yeah. Okay, yep.
And I've got a message thing.
All so, right. Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, and then, "Oh, well, we'll have to get married. I can't keep on this rushing up here, you know."
Okay.
So we met in the...
So it's a pretty matter-of-fact proposal then. He didn't go down on his knee or anything too romantic.
No, they didn't do that.
No. You're a more practical fella.
And we got married and lived happily ever afterwards.
Okay. So you got married in your hometown? Or?
Yes. And it was a bit of a blow leaving my mother. I said, "Will you come down and live in the Apollo Bay?" And she said, no, this is my home.
Mm.
But we had Billy, my eldest son, was born. We were married in November and he was born next September, you know, like all the warm brides.
Sure, yeah. So this was, which year were you married?
And the end of 47.
47. So you came, and you came to live here then. Yeah.
And then, so we got married and we lived two doors along. Jeff said, "Oh no, I've got a block of land. I bought a block of land when I come back with me." Whatever pay, reserve pay or something. And he said, "I bought a little place," and he said, "I'm going to build it so it'll be the garage, but we'll live in it, you
to start
see,
with. Yeah, yeah.
before." Mm. And as usually happened, we didn't do that. We eventually added on to it. Norma Allen lives there now.
Okay,
in that house, as well. And it's cement sheets out and in. Because it's all you can get.
Yeah.
And then my mother said, "You know, I might as well sell up and Druin and tell Come Jeff down. To look around for a block of land."
Mm.
So this one was vacant.
Hmm.
So she bought the block of land. He paid $75 for his block of land, £75, when he came home from the war. It was all vacant from Mrs. Jones lived next door, and there was one down, the old brick house down there. And they were $75. he used to say afterwards, "I should have bought the lot, shouldn't I?" It's easy to be wise after the event. And his mother had lived here, of course. His mother had married again. Her parents were divorced when divorce was absolutely unheard of, And his mother was at the last protege of Madame Melba.
Okay.
And Madame Melba was very cross when she got married.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah.
She's reckoned she'd have gone a long way, you know.
Okay.
Anyway, that's another story. And
so did she know Damien Egg? Did you know Damien Egg?
I know the name.
He was in the arts and I think went overseas from Apollo Bay. Anyway, I don't
know. Well, she didn't live in a Polybay.
Oh, okay.
Her parents came down here and then, and she was divorced, and which was unheard of in those days, you know. And then she met this chap down here, Charlie Du Bois, and married, they were married, lived up the road a bit. And his sister was married to a fellow in Melbourne, and they owned this block of land. And Jeff said, would you think about selling it? Frances's mother was looking for a block. And so they thought about selling it. Well, he paid £75 for her, and they paid £375 for that. She did. That's how they were leaping up.
Even back then.
But she didn't mind. And she sold her house in Druin and brought all this stuff down, which I've got, still got half of it.
So you started a family, you've got...
Oh, yes, so there we had one, and then Alan didn't arrive till Billy was nearly three. And he was supposed to have been born in this hospital because they'd started to build, and see, there was no question of it. When I came here... There was the bush nurse up at the corner where Albert Biddle used to live, and I had my mother's second youngest sister lived down the corner. She was a Ramsden, and she had seven or eight children. So my first baby, I had a track either to the bush nurse or to Auntie Beely. It was wonderful because I didn't have my mother, you see, and. Lilla Lurkey had there was a lot of us. They all got married and they come back from the war, and they all had babies. They didn't know.
So there was a big community of mums and kids. And
all having babies this year. And she had hers, and she, you'd had to ring up and get the hire car if you didn't have your own car, you know, to take you to Colic. And the doctor, we had a doctor by then, and he said he'd book us all in to Colac Hospital. Lilla got as far as Skeens Creek, and nurse stopped and said, we'll go into this place. I forget his name. He was the shire of the White Boys and lived at Skeens Creek. I should remember his name. And had her baby there. And when I was talking to the bush nurse the last time I rested up, I said, I hope I don't have my baby out at Skeens Creek. She said, oh, my dear, you won't have your baby there. And I didn't know. It was about 2.5 days, 7 miles. But at the first, the third, second or third pain, Jeff had his mother organised and a friend of hers organised and a hire car, and off we went to Colac.
And you made it?
I made it by 2 days.
Okay. Plenty of time.
But we were, and in that, you wouldn't believe this, in that room there were three of us from Apollo Bay, and they were very cross. The matron was very cross, and one of the nurses was very cross. And one of them became my very best friend, May Willis. Her husband was the weeds inspector here.
Yep.
The other one was Marge Kennedy, who lives up the road.
Yep.
May had her baby one day. 3 days later, Marge had hers early in the morning. And 12 hours later, I had mine.
There you go.
Three women in the Bolivar with these babies. I'll tell you who's one is Brian Kennedy. Do you know Brian? Lives out Bayview Way?
No, I don't think so. Oh. No. So so now you've got two babies and you're living just up the street still?
Yeah, yes.
And then
my mother thought, well, it's really time I got on to having this house built, you see. And she hadn't, but she didn't have any family in Druin. She had, she had my half-brother, but he became a teacher. But he was 17 years older than me. We were never very close, you know. Mm. You only saw him at holiday times. And And he wasn't in Druin anyway.
Mm. So you were her family, really?
Yes. Yeah. She said I'd be silly not to come. So anyway, she had this house built and Jeff oversaw it. Mm-hmm. Is that the word?
Yep. That's the word, yep.
And by the time she came here, I was pregnant with Nerida.
Uh-huh.
So I had my mother when Nerida was born. In our own hospital.
Oh, fantastic. That was a real treat, yeah.
I've worked for the hospital all ever since they started, but practically, although not very much while they had babies.
So what were you doing there?
I was just doing what everybody does who had three kids under five or six.
Yeah, yeah.
And the women didn't go to work then, you know.
Of course not. No.
No, it was a different. But I did have, Nerida was only a baby and the headmaster came down and he was Marge Kennedy's father, actually, and he was a nice man. And I can see him. We must have been still, we're still over in that house. And my mother was living here because I can still see him now and he was begging me to come back to teach.
Okay.
And I said, I can't. I said, I've got... He said, oh, you've got Billy at school. Billy's started school. Mm. And I said, yeah, but I've got another one and there's not 2 years between them, you know. Oh, and started quoting the salary to me, which sounded like a fortune. And I said, oh, I don't think so. Anyway, he said, well, I'll just think about it, discuss it with your husband. And, of course, Jeff would say, well, you do what you want to do. And so I went to come home and told my mother. And she said, how much would you get? I said, oh, he said I'd get £12 a week. £12 a week, you know, that was a fortune. She said, Frances, I will give you £12 a week not to go, she said, because I can't, I'm too old to look after those two little kids. I said, oh, well, that's good enough for me, but I said, I don't want your £12 a week. She was very generous to me.
Yeah, yeah.
But, it was funny, wasn't it? And she loved them dearly, and they visited her all the time. Yeah. But just the fact of having sole control of them 5 days a week.
Yeah, it would have been too much. Yeah.
Yes, and of course she had her sisters here. Mm. She brought her car with her, and she could tootle around and visit her sisters in her old rugby, you know. Mm.
So she was how old around this time?
She died when she was 76. Nerida was a funny little girl. The back paddocks, you know, they're big long blocks, weren't fenced. And you could just get out our little back gate, which you'd probably crawl under the fence. And she'd toddle over here.
Mm.
And I'd, where is she, you know?
Mm.
And Alan was one of those placid babies that if you sat him in the corner, he sat, you know.
Mm.
You think, oh, God, I've left him sitting there. You can get up now. And where is I think by this time he was going to kindergarten.
Mm.
We'd started a kindergarten. And she came over here and Mum had chooks, you see.
Mm.
And she had a fence thing that you pulled out and chooks could get in and out, but they couldn't get in the garden. And she'd been chook house sitting down there.
Yeah.
Patting chooks. And I'd come in and I'd say, I found this in the chook yard, Mum.
So there was a really strong sense of community in Apollo at that time.
Oh, there was, yes.
Everyone
I wasn't here very, very long and everybody knew me. And Saturday was sort of market day. Everybody shopped on Saturday. And if you went down the street, people would stop and say, oh, you're the new bride, you know, aren't you?
Yeah.
Because half of them were related, but the other half that weren't soon got to know who I was.
Yeah.
And Druin wasn't a friendly town, really.
Similar size?
Oh, no, it was bigger town.
Okay.
Yes. And, I had friends. I had very good friends there, but never sort of...
Do you think the difference is because Apollo Bay's a bit more isolated?
I think
And people know they've got to kind of get along and look out for each other. And
that's right.
Yeah.
Yes, it was just, that was it. Then they had what they called a farmer's bus, and it ran on a Thursday. And so my mother soon found out about that, and she used to go up to Colac every Thursday.
Okay.
Farmer's bus.
Good on her. And so did so when she died, was that a shock? Were you expecting that?
Oh, well, she wasn't well, and she had to have this operation, and she seemed to be getting over it, but she died.
Yeah.
And it was a blow, but at the same time, Jeff's mother, who was 20 years younger than my mother, had breast cancer.
Okay, yeah.
And that was a death sentence then, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, Dr. Capone was here. Have you heard of Dr. Capone?
No.
Oh, he was a character. He really was, but he was a marvellous doctor.
Mm.
If you went to him and he'd say, well, actually, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. Don't waste me time. But if you were sick, and while Jeff was over, the break would have sanded up, and they had to chop a hole in it so they could get in and out, and it wasn't very satisfactory. And he was fishing with Max Smith by then, and father of John Smith, and five kids and his pregnant wife, I think, and off they went over to Port Lincoln, and because they couldn't fish here, you see. So then he came home for the Christmas. They came home for Christmas. They've only been home. I drove up to Melbourne and picked them up on the train. I think they come on the train, and turned out all right, we were all going to shift to Port Lincoln, you see. Well, he'd been come home for Christmas and he'd only been home 2 days, and one of his mates rang up and said he'd left his boat in Adelaide anchored and it had sunk in the night.
Right. Okay.
I never knew what happened.
How or why, yeah.
And Jeff never actually said, he was that sort of person who wouldn't accuse anybody, but they said, oh, the plug came out. And Jeff said, no plug ever come out of my boat on its own.
Yeah.
So they had to go rushing back. And but anyway, Jeff's mother got cancer, and then that was a real blow because she was only 56 or something. You know, that's young, isn't it? When Nerida turned 56, she said, I can't believe it, you know.
Yeah.
And Nerida was, because she, little girl, you know, otherwise she adored. She used to sing at all the things, and she played the piano beautifully. And she was teaching Billy the piano. But when she died, he wouldn't go back. He said, no, I'm not going to anybody else. But Alan did, and Alan was Mrs. Barber's star pupil.
Okay.
Playing the piano.
So how did your kids grow up? What did they become, and how did they?
Well, actually, Billy went off to the Gordon and did a course of commerce or something. But he got in with the surfing crowd, which didn't have a very good name at the time, and it wasn't going to move away from or miss out on his surfing, you know. But he did settle down in the end. And Alan was, Mrs. Slocum was the teacher, and he used to keep telling everybody that Alan was the cleverest child he'd ever seen. And Alan used to get cross at that, you know. It doesn't do to.
No, no.
He used to say, I'm not the cleverest child.
Well, you certainly don't want to be pointed out as one if you are.
No.
Yeah.
Anyway, but he finished up and they got their leaving or whatever it was then. And Nerida wasn't the cleverest child, but at maths, she'd come home and she'd say, oh, that woman taught, or man or whoever taught us maths, I can't understand it. And I said, oh, well, we'll get Alan to show you, because Alan was still is a real dapper at maths. So he'd show her. And then she'd come to me and she'd say, "Mum, I can hardly, he's as bad as the teacher, I can't understand him." And I said, "Well, we'll solve that."
Mm.
I said to Alan, "Now you teach me that, whatever it is."
Mm.
So we did, so that I had to simplify and teach narrative. So there was some point in being a teacher,
yeah,
wasn't
there? Absolutely, it? Yeah, you bet, you bet.
So I joined the Mothers Club as soon as Billy went to school, and I finished up 16 years on the Mothers Club, and I was also on the school committee, and,
yep.
and the RSL, you know, Jeff was a great one, the RSL, and then when they started to build a hospital, and so I got on the ladies' auxiliary, you know, and
so you've always been involved in the town.
Oh, and, yes, yeah. And the guides. So yep. And the guides too. Yep. I was guide commissioner for a couple of years.
Okay.
And you'd wonder how I've had time to do anything
yeah,
else.
Yeah, well, it's amazing, isn't it?
But really? It's only a little town. If you want to be in these things and you're in them, and if you're quite happy to take office, but I wouldn't go back teaching because it was too much of a... I eventually went back emergency teaching.
Mm.
I didn't mind that. And the pay was a lot better then.
Have you ever... did you ever think you wished you went to university?
Yes, in later years I did. I thought he did the wrong thing. He should have rang my mother.
Mm.
He shouldn't have put it to a stupid 16-year-old girl, should he?
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
You know. And just think, you sort of think to yourself, I suppose, well, I've finished studying, you know, now this is it.
Mm.
And here he is, he wants me to go to university. And what am I going to do? Study for the next 4 years, whatever. And I never told her because she would have rang him back, I know.
Yeah, and she probably would have been unnecessarily upset about something she couldn't do anything about.
I never told her for years and years and years, you know.
Yeah.
When I had three kids, I think I might have told her. And she said, "Oh, well, that's your lookout, isn't it?"
So in later years, when the kids were older, when did you move to this house?
Oh, we moved here... when my mother died, that was the idea.
Yep.
It took us about nearly 12 months by the time
just to move up the street.
Yes, you know, and sort out all her
all
things
the details,
and have a sale and so forth. And then we moved in here and he eventually sold that house there.
Yeah.
And I mean, he was fishing by then, of course. He went fishing when Nerida was born. And...
So you were the wife of a fisherman for a long time?
A long time, yes. He came back when the breakwater, you know, came better.
Got sorted.
And he and Frank Barron they really got the things, the freezer and everything going. Frank had been fishing. He'd been in the services, but he had been a fisherman all his life, you know. And he and Jeff were the go-getters. And then they got to the stage where they'd lose 2 or 3 days fishing to go off to see some member of parliament to try and get something, you know.
Yep.
But that was it. That was what they did. And then Frank died in his 50s. It was a bit of a blow. Jeff decided to build a boat, and I thought, how does he think he could build a boat? And in the backyard, he built the most beautiful boat in the backyard.
Really? Fantastic.
And then and he called it the Marga. I didn't tell you about my name, the Marga.
No.
M-A-R-G-H-A. When my father came home from the war, and I told you he gained his sight, when this little girl was born, he said, I'll tell you what, my mother suggested something for the second name, and she was Frances Ellen, and her mother was Frances, so I was to be Frances. He said, well, I'd like to be Marga. That's the ship I came home in.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's your middle name.
And so I was a very...
So the boat was called Marga. That's
nice. And So anyway, I can remember that, the launching of that, the kids got a day off school to come and watch the launching, and that vacant block at the back so it could go straight through on the thing, you know.
Yep.
And then he fished in the Marga for a while, and then he got, you know, get a lot of time off, fishermen.
Mm. Yep.
I think I better build another boat. And all right, I suppose you can. You built that one all right.
Mm.
So the next one was after that, and it was doing all right, you know. We weren't wealthy, but
food on the table and a bit of what you want. Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Drove a car all the time. Yeah. You know. I had my license when I was 20.
Yep.
And I've given it up, you know. And
just recently.
And I handed it. Well, I had a bit of a fright up the road, and I'd been thinking, oh, I think it's time I gave up. I was 90 this year and last year. And
so you're 91 now.
I will be in March.
In March.
And when I got out of the car and I came home, and I thought, that's it.
Mm.
I was going to give it, due on the 3rd of December, and I thought this was September. So when Alan came home, because Alan got married and got a Filipino wife, she's lovely.
Mm.
So I couldn't have picked a better wife. And they live in this unit up the back, you see.
Mm.
And always comes in when he comes home from work, and he said, I started to tell him about this. He said, did you ever think of giving up driving?
Mm.
I said, I've given it up, Alan. Here's the keys. I had them in my pocket.
Yeah.
He said, oh, good. So that was it.
So you're very matter-of-fact about things. Oh, you're a very practical person.
Well, yes, you know. I mean, I could have run over somebody. Mm. I could have, you know, you could have killed them or anything. And I thought, well, you lose your, not your concentration so much, but you lose the speed of your thinking.
Yeah.
You know.
So how long have you been on your own?
Well, Jeff's been dead 14 and a half years now.
Okay, it's a long time. Mm. Yeah. And did that come as a surprise? Was that, or was he crook?
Oh, yes, he was. Mm. He was in the Navy. He was on the Shropshire.
Mm.
And he was in the Navy for, he joined the Navy, went and joined up at 17. He was over on the ship and off to, they went to England, actually. Okay.
So is that where he got his love of the sea, do you think, or?
Oh, he always loved the sea. They lived at Skeens Creek.
Ah.
He loved fishing. Mm. That's another thing. His mother, they lived up the creek in Skeens Creek, and he could come home from school and she'd say, oh, I haven't got anything for tea, run down and catch a fish. Mm. But he could go down and catch a couple of fish. Mm. Imagine
Fantastic.
It. It's weekend, she'd say, oh, how about riding your bike down the beach and catch it as a crayfish?
Fantastic.
It was heaven, wasn't it?
Mm, mm.
Yeah, so
so I got crook and...
Oh, yes. And he was... it was cancer.
Mm.
And cancer of the throat, actually.
That's tough.
And Brian Rowley was here at the time. He was very good to him because we'd had a leaving doctor and he wasn't much, and Brian came back. He had been here in New Jersey, and he sat up there because in the surgery, ringing up surgeons in Geelong, they all go on holidays at Christmas, and apparently the head of the, I forget what they call the head of the thing in the
surgical
Geelong.
Unit or something. Yeah,
he said, well, I don't do much now, he said, but I am a surgeon, he said. You can send him up to me.
Mm.
And then they arranged a date. And then he said, look, I found another one who's here. And he was very nice. I've forgotten his name, but he was very nice. And it was cancer. And of course, he couldn't speak then.
Mm.
Jeff was not a talkative person, but it is a big barrier.
So he was 70? odd when he died?
Yeah, it was seven. I think by the time he died, I think he would have turned 77. Mm. Yeah. So he had a good life,
a reasonable
really.
Yeah.
Bill, Jim Goodlett was very good to him. Mm. You would have known Jim, of course.
I know of him. Yeah.
He used to visit him a lot, and he always had a great garden. He'd always bring him little veggies and things.
Mm.
And at his funeral, I asked Jim. Jeff had a great friend, his best friend in the Navy, but lived in Queensland. And he did come down to see him, but he said, I won't be down for the funeral. I couldn't handle it.
Mm.
And he said, if you could find someone else to read it, I'll write it.
Okay.
And Jim Goodlett did it. Wasn't that lovely of him?
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah,
lovely man.
Mm. So what keeps you busy now?
What keeps me busy now? Well, I until just recently, I've been working in the op shop every Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
But now Jan's like, do you know Jan in the op shop?
Yeah, I think so.
Lovely woman. She said to me, you can come whenever you like. You can come on Fridays and I'll put an extra chair there for you to sit on, but don't feel you have to. So that's nice,
isn't
it?
Yeah, that's lovely.
And I'm very lucky because Billy works at the freezer. Anyway, he's quite happy working over at the freezer, so he comes for tea every Sunday night and supplies the fish. And Alan was pretty smart too, but we sent him away to school up to Geelong, but Mr. Slocum used to say to him, "You'll go a long way, lad. You're so brainy, and it doesn't do, does it? For his leaving year, we sent him up to Geelong, and he was going to one of the high schools there and boarding, and he came home after a fortnight and he said, Mum, I'm not going back. He said, they're so far ahead of me in all the things they're doing. I said, what do you think you're going to do? He said, I'm going fishing with Dad. So Jeff had built another boat, and then this was the absolute crowning thing, the last boat he named Otway. He put the Nerida. Alan had taken over the Nerida. And so we were fishing in Otway, and he said, I think I might put it on the market. It'll take a few years to sell. The blessed thing sold in 3 months, and he wasn't 60. You know, what are we going to do with it? And he said, I think we'll... We thought about it for a while, and he said, how would it be if we buy a caravan and tour around Australia? We'd already been around with the Depplers and the Hunters.
Yep.
Fairly quick trip around and hired caravans. And how would you like that? I said, oh, I'd love it. He said, you know, we could live on a boat, he said. So we went up and we found 1770.
Yep.
And that was Shangri-La, you know. And so we went up there every winter for 3 months, and it was great life.
Okay.
So, and then he said, I'll have to do something else. He had to be doing something, so he bought an old sort of a black-looking steel boat. I forget what it was even named. Nerida named that one. And then somebody offered him something for it, so he sold it. And then he said, I think I'll try and get a nice little cruiser and we could live in it, you know, sort of go off. We won't sell the house or anything, but we'll just, you know, go up and stay as long as we like. And, of course, he started, but that's when he got so sick. So we never got around to that. And I think we sold that after he died, actually. We're still there in the yard, you know. But Alan has been a wonderful backstop for me, you know. He's a good businessman, and he's a pretty smart cookie, you know. And I don't know what to do with that Nerida. She bosses me like mad, but, you know.
You're busy and you're well.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So Do you think you're just lucky, or do you think?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, mind you, I smoked for 40 years, and the anti-smokers hate me saying that. Mm. 40 years I smoked. You see.
Yeah, we all did.
And of course, Jeff smoked when they went in the Navy. That's how he got his gold card, because when they went in the Navy, they said, you blokes would be wise to take up smoking. Yeah. So they did.
Yeah. So what do you look forward to?
Each day as it comes, I think. Mm. It doesn't worry me. I know life's, you know, I mean, to get to 90.
It's a temporary arrangement, however old you are.
Of course it is. And my grandmother Bors was, she lived in Druin too, and she lived till she was 90 and 3 or 4 months.
Mm.
And although she had sold her house and gone to live with her youngest daughter, woke up one morning, Auntie Elsie said, and said, she'd go in to get her up, you see, and got her up, and she said, I don't feel too good, Elsie. And Auntie Elsie said, oh, get back into bed, you don't have to get up. And she got back into bed and shut her eyes and died.
Well, there you go.
How about that?
That's not too bad.
Oh, I reckon that was good. Yeah. So, I've got 4 grandchildren, and I've got 3 and a half great-grandchildren.
Fantastic.
And, and they're a joy, you know.
Yeah.
And I see a fair bit of Sonny and Charlotte and Penny.
Mm.
You probably know Charlotte and Penny. And I get on very well with my kids, and I get on very well with Rinky Wilfred, and I get on very well with Mick. Mm-hmm. And
Is there anyone you don't get on well with?
No? I don't think so. Life's too short, isn't it? You know, sometimes think, oh, I can't be bothered with them. But and I get on with my neighbours, and Pat over the road, you know, Pat Shannon. Mm. And
so what do you think the trick of it is? I mean, to be, aside from being lucky...
must be your genes, I think.
You think so?
Yeah.
You think? Do you think it's anything in your attitude or your... You know,
I suppose it could be to a certain extent, you know. I've got good friends, but I've never had, I've had a few friends that we've lived in each other's pockets, but I get on very well with my neighbours and, you know, and my children have all been very good to me. Mm. I've never fought with my children, you know. A lot of people do.
Yeah.
Don't they?
Yeah.
And I never have, and and that helps.
Yep.
And I had a very happy marriage. I never regretted it. I had lots of boyfriends,
very fortunate life indeed.
Yeah, I have really. Yeah. So I couldn't really. I played the Blessed Church organ for 30 years, but I gave it up before Christmas. And Renee said to me, oh, we'll have a little something for you. I said, oh, please don't.
Mm. So do you have a strong faith? A strong faith with the church?
Oh, yes, I suppose, yes, I did. I went to Sunday school, and then I was confirmed, and my mother, after Dad died, my mother took up church work, and they were building a new church, and she got us onto the committee, and I always reckon she invented street stalls. She come up with this idea. There were 6 women in a Druin, and... this was before the war, you know, and money was pretty scarce. They decided to build this brick church.
Yeah.
And she suggested that they'd try a street stall. And one guest house in Druin had a veranda that you could sort of, like a porch, you know. And they went down, those women down there, and found her book afterwards, you know, she'd make lemon butter every street stall. They'd be lucky to make, you know, 7 and 6 or something.
Yeah, still,
but those women worked like mad, you know, for things like that.
Yeah.
And the RSL ladies she worked for.
Mm.
And so to me, when you got married and you had the time, you did something, you know. And and then I was the first one confirmed in the new church.
Mm.
And so that was quite a day too. Mm. And then I was married in it.
Mm.
And another thing now, my music teacher which I learnt to play the piano. They bought a piano when I was about seven. I must have been about seven and a half or eight when I started music lessons. And her name was Mrs. Pertzel, and she said to me one day, "We're going to go down to the church." This is the little old wooden church we were still in. And she said, I said, "Oh, what for?" She said, "Oh, I'm going to..." We had an old pedal organ and that. "I'm going to teach you to play the organ," she said, "so that you can, when I'm too old or dead, you can play the organ." Oh, I wasn't sure I wanted to do that, but still I had to. You know, you didn't tell your music teacher you weren't going to do it.
Sure, yeah. The hell to pay. Yeah.
Though, you know, you weren't practising much this week. Mm. And I did win a silver medal for her once in under 10 or under 12 or something. And so she said, "Now when I retire, you can take over." And of course, by the time they built a new church, they also bought a new organ, which was a very early electric organ. And I got married in that church, and she played. Jeff said to me, "Oh, Mum would like her friend Molly Burton to play the organ." I said, "I couldn't possibly agree." She's taught me all these years, and she reckoned she's very unhappy that I'm leaving the town, you know. So anyway, and because Jeff's mother was singing, you see, and she played. I said, "She's quite as good an organist as she'll ever find anyway." And so that's how I came to be able to play the organ. But for about 10 years or something, I never went near the church because I didn't like the minister.
Okay, yep.
And Jeff was no churchgoer. So this is
obviously part of your happy disposition. If you don't like something, you just don't bother with it much.
It's no good getting upset about it, is it?
No.
Jeff was a very calm sort of a person, you know. I don't think he ever lost his temper, well, never with me anyway. And anything he tried to do, he'd do, you know. He was very clever like that.
Yeah.
But it's no good trying to fight what you can't change.
Yeah, that's the thing you can't change. That's absolutely right. Francis, thanks very much for talking to us.
I've enjoyed it too, really.
Yeah,
I'm a yapping machine, as you can see.